Let's start with the cyclic compound, in fact, because that's going to be the easiest one to answer. How many stereocenters are on this molecule?
One.
Just one. Because the bottom, where there's the two methyl groups, since there's two methyl groups, if you flop the position of the methyl groups, you'd produce exactly the same stereocenter again. So almost any time that we have two or more of the same substituent on one position, it's not going to be a stereocenter. And so then we have the one position here that, yes, is going to be a stereocenter. Why? Because if you go one, two positions to the clockwise direction, we end up with methyl groups. But to get those same methyl groups, we'd have to go one, two, three, four carbons the other direction. So it's not symmetric, and so that means it is a stereocenter. If we're doing it by the first point of difference rule, you know, we go one position either direction, you have the same thing. So you'd have to go out to the next position, which over here, there's just hydrogens. Down below, we have the methyl groups. Since carbon takes priority over hydrogen, that means that this bottom portion of the ring will be priority one. The top will be two. Then deuterium, lower atomic number and mass number, but atomic number is what we look at first. Deuterium's lower than carbon. Then hydrogen, it's the same atomic number as deuterium, but it's also lower mass number, and so it's the lowest priority. Now, since hydrogen is located in the back, that means we are looking at it at the correct way, so whatever way that we see the substituents processing is the way that we take it. And since it's going to the right like this, that means it is R. Now, don't feel embarrassed if you didn't get it, because we're just starting to do practice, but out of curiosity, if you feel like answering, how many of you got that one right? So, a fair number. Let's go to the first problem. One of these stereocenters will be pretty easy. The other one, still easy, but we do have to use the priority rule. So, the right-hand position, is that R or S?
R.
And we can know that because oxygen's going to take priority over carbon, so it's more important. Then a methyl group versus anything longer than a methyl group. It's not always that it's the longer chain that is more important, but since it's a carbon chain, automatically that means it's going to have more important substituents on it. And so that'll be priority number two. Methyl group will be three. Again, the unwritten hydrogen in the correct position in back number four. So yes, it is R. Now, what about the stereocenter that's closer to the left? And let me redraw the molecule so we don't confuse the answer here. So chloride versus the OH group. So the chloride, what is the configuration of that stereocenter? Well, let's make sure. First, chloride is going to be the most important substituent, chlorine over carbon. Then, now we do need to use that first point of difference rule. So, at the point of attachment, I have a carbon versus a carbon. At each one of those positions, what do I have attached? Well, a carbon and two hydrogens. So, since they have the same priorities, I can't use that position to choose. So I have to go to the next position out. At the next position out, what do I have? Well, at the left hand, I have a carbon and two hydrogens. But on the right hand side, I have an oxygen, carbon, and hydrogen. Since oxygen is more important than carbon, then that means the chain on the right, yes, is more important. And then, even though there's two oxygens on the left-hand chain, that doesn't matter. It's where the first point of difference occurs. So this was supposed to be a trick problem where you see, ooh, two alcohols, more important. But no, that's not true. It's where it's a difference at the first point of difference, which is right here. So one, two, three, yes, those look like they're going counterclockwise, and so that is an S stereocenter. Questions about these problems, because this much we've covered, although the use of the first point of difference we hadn't practiced at all. You kind of got it thrown at you right at the end of the stereochemistry lecture last time. How many of you have been practicing now that the test is over, practicing RNS stereocenters, reading them, figuring them out? So the other 40-something of you need to get on it right away, because when I said that within 5 or 10 seconds you need to be able to figure out RNS, I do mean it, and that means by the time of the second exam. You are going to have RNS questions on the quiz next week as well, so time to start practicing. Yes? Well, we're gonna slowly do naming, but right now we're just focusing on RNS. Shall we do the last problem then? The last problem involves a topic I had to skip over the other day called phantom atoms. Because we have a stereocenter. It's definitely a stereocenter because we have four different things attached. An alkene, an alkyl group, an OH, and then a hydrogen that's in back. But how do we decide whether an alkene's more important or an alkyl group? We need to have some systematic way to do it. And the way to do that is to rewrite using what are called phantom atoms. So let me show you phantom atoms before we use them in the problem. Sometimes they're called virtual atoms, meaning they're not really there. And here's the way it works. If I have a double bond, to show that there's a double connection going on explicitly, we rewrite it like this. You make the double bond a single bond, and then you add a mirrored atom that indicates what would have been in that second connection. So carbon-oxygen double bond, you rewrite with a carbon-oxygen single bond, but then you double the oxygen. You put just another oxygen in. And nothing ends up connected to it. So like if this double bond was at the end of a molecule and I had a methyl group, well, the rest of the structure stays the same. It's just that I've added these new extra atoms. From oxygen's perspective, there is nothing else connected to it except carbon. And so you leave a single bond to that original carbon. But again, to show the double bondedness of the oxygen, you write in this phantom carbon. So, when determining priorities involving double or triple bonds, the bonds are rewritten. Using multiple single bonds. Let's rewrite the example we're supposed to be working on and see how that's applied. So rewriting it, everything else in the molecule stays the same, everything that's already a single bond. But here at this carbon, I'll rewrite it as having a single bond with the next carbon. Then since it's a carbon-carbon double bond, that means each of the carbons gets a phantom carbon atom. How does that help our case? Well, let's analyze this for RNS. At the first point of attachment, what do we have connected? A carbon and a carbon. So since we can't choose between the two of them, we have to see what's attached to each position. On the position on the left, we have two methyl groups and a hydrogen. So that's CCH. On the right, we also have CCH. Notice that we're using that phantom atom, that rewritten phantom atom, as one of the atoms that we count. That's why we do it in this way, so that we can have single bond to single bond comparison. There's no question how to compare. But we can't decide at this point because we have CCH and CCH. So what do? We go along the most important chain on each side. Now on the left, it doesn't matter which way we go because we're going to end up with a methyl group. On the right, I can either go along the chain that has effectively two carbons on it, or I could go along the chain that just ends at a carbon. Well, if I'm going along the most important chain, I'm going to go along the chain that has the two carbons. And so now let's see what's at these positions. For the methyl group, it's going to be just hydrogen, hydrogen, hydrogen. That's what methyl means. But over here, because we have that phantom atom, it's carbon, hydrogen, hydrogen. That makes the tiebreaker. And in this case, even though the alkene only has two carbons, it's going to be more important than the isopropyl group. So that means oxygen, priority one, because it's higher than carbon. The double bond, because of this application of phantom atoms, is more important than the isopropyl group. And so this is an S stereocenter. How many of you had read about phantom atoms, even though we skipped over it in class? So again, just the small number of hands. You will need to know phantom atoms for the quiz, because you need to be able to do R and S for the quiz. Questions about phantom atoms, or should I let you read about it and then we can talk about it again on Wednesday? Read about it and try it, and then we'll talk about it again on Wednesday? Okay. So let's get to the topics that we need to cover for the rest of lecture, which are enantiomers, diastereomers, optical activity, and racemization. And I'm going to start with optical activity, actually, because we've already had this idea that there's handedness in tetrahedral geometry. So I built some models the previous time, one of which we ended up calling left-handed, one of which we ended up calling right-handed. And we're going to use the term enantiomers to describe these mirror images. But I want to focus on the physical properties of them before we get formally to what enantiomers are, because since they're mirror images, they're identical in every way except for one physical property, which is this optical activity, more specifically in the form of optical rotation. So to get at what optical rotation is, I've got to tell you a little bit of a story. Imagine that we have a light source. And let's say it's some kind of old-fashioned light bulb that gives off light that goes in all directions. Not only does it give light off in all directions, but even if you're traveling in one direction, there's different ways the waves can be oriented in terms of their angle. Well, we can pass the light through what's known as a polarizer. And polarizer's got a whole bunch of slits in it that cause light that's wiggling only in one direction to pass through. So again, if you had light that was traveling in a line, maybe it's wiggling this way, maybe it's wiggling this way, maybe it's wiggling this way, this way, this way. All different angles are possible. You pass it through a polarizer, only one direction of wiggling is going to be let through because it's the rest of the angles are blocked by the polarizer itself. Well, that's fine. But what happens when you pass polarized light through something that is optically active, something that is chiral? So let's say that I put a sample in here. Well, then, for example, instead of the light wiggling up and down in the plane of the paper as what I'm trying to indicate in this first part of the diagram, it'll get twisted. So let's say that now it was coming in and out of the paper. What we could do to measure that twist is use another polarizer. Because look at the way that I've got this diagram set up. If light passed through the first polarizer, and let's say it was made to only wiggle straight up and down, and if there was not a sample in the middle, and I let that light just pass right through and hit another polarizer that was at 90 degree angles, well, the light might pass through the first polarizer, but won't be able to pass through the second because it's exactly orthogonal. This is a situation called crossed polarizers, which old versions of 3D movies worked on that kind of principle. In fact, even the glasses they use still do something kind of like this, where one glass is polarized one way, one glass is polarized the other way. The two images that are being projected, one of those images is being projected with light that is polarized one way to match one of your eyes, and then the other camera is projecting light that's polarized the opposite direction. Well, if you have the right matching polarization, then when you look through the glasses, you'll see that particular image. But the one that's polarized the other direction, you won't be able to see it all. And that's how you can have glasses that don't require any batteries or such when you go to the movies, because they are projecting these two differently polarized images. So that's somewhat like what's going on here. If you take the older style glasses that you'd use where it was linearly polarized like this, then if you took the one pair of glasses and put them on top of the other and twisted around, the lens would go light and dark and light and dark as the polarizations lined up and then crossed, and then lined up again. But this is if there's nothing in between the two polarizers. If you have something that twists light in between, then even if you had cross polarizers, some of that light may have gotten through. Because it goes through the first polarizer, it's only traveling one direction, it travels through a compound which twists it. And if you have even any component of that new wave that's lined up the right way, the light's going to pass through. And so what you can do, in fact, is adjust the angle between the two polarizers and determine the degree of optical rotation. This optical rotation is the one thing that's different between mirror images, because if one molecule rotates it clockwise, the other molecule is going to rotate it counterclockwise. So let me summarize this physical property and how it could be measured. So optical rotation. It's a physical property of chiral compounds. In which plane polarized light oscillating in only one direction, is twisted as it passes through the compound. And here's an important statement. Molecules that are images, they're mirror images of each other, will have equal but opposite optical rotation. Clockwise versus counterclockwise. Clockwise to the right, we ascribe that as having a positive rotation value. Counterclockwise, we say, has a negative rotation. And you'll even see the names of compounds sometimes quoted not with R and S, but this plus or minus. So limonene, a compound that is used, or that it's found in lemons and limes. There's a plus version, which means that if you pass light through it, rotates to the light, right? And there's a minus version. But here's an important point. There is no connection between R and S and plus and minus, except that mirror molecules have opposite rotation. What I mean by that is the following. If I write any random molecule down and I write it in its R configuration, and if I ask you, is it going to have plus or minus rotation, the answer is, I don't know. I have to measure it first. Because unless you have some super sophisticated computer model, there is no way to tell from the structure if it is going to be plus or minus. But if you do have a compound that only has one stereocenter, and that stereocenter happens to be R, and that R configuration happens to cause positive rotation, so if it happens to be plus, then when you make the mirror image, which would make the S form, it will be minus, but only because it's the opposite. So once you know what one is, you can predict what the other is. But if I just say, is it plus or minus, and all you see is a structure on paper, you can't answer that question, because it depends just on the physical structure of the molecule as to whether it is plus or minus. Yes? Well, what we're going to see is that if you have multiple stereocenters, some may twist one direction, some may twist the other. So you're going to have an overall optical activity for the entire molecule. But another thing that we're going to do with this is, what if we start out with a chiral solution and we do a chemical reaction that ends up where there's no optical rotation? Well, for those of you who are in section one, and if you remember, if you survived the lecture this morning and you remember SN1, unimolecular substitution, where you get 50-50 substitution, well, if you have 50% of the molecules that twist light one way and 50 the other, they cancel each other out. And that's where we're leading up to. That's why it's important to know what optical rotation is. Yes? Yes, they can. They can rotate multiple times as you go through. So there's something called specific rotation that takes into account the path length that you travel through. But since I'm trying to reduce the number of calculations we even worry about in here, I'm going to skim over that topic. But yes, as you pass through, it may rotate over and over and over and over again. And so so there's this value that we normally report covers that fact and specifies that you're really looking over a certain distance. Yes?
So, from last lecture, you talked about absolute configurations.
That's R and S.
So is it for us to determine which way it goes, or is it naturally observed?
Naturally, a molecule doesn't know it's R and S. It's our label, so that if I said, for example, butane to all, well, you could ask me, well, which one, R or S? And then if I say R, then by the convention, you'd know to be able to write it down on paper, which actually that's a skill that you need to have, and maybe I should emphasize. Besides me just writing molecules and asking if it's RNS, what if I tell you, write down the molecule, for example, S-butan-2-ol. So the absolute configuration is the idea that we can put this label S, and as long as you know how to handle the convention, you'd be able to come up with the right molecule.
So they don't rotate, right? For molecules that have S or R, they don't actually rotate in space in 3D?
They can, but we got to be careful when we're saying rotate. Are you talking about the molecules rotating, the bonds rotating, or light passing through the molecules rotating?
So rotate around.
That's right, and that's just to redraw it on paper. In real life, all the bonds are rotating all the time, all the bonds are wiggling the whole time. But when we're trying to figure R and S out, what I was showing is how to redraw rotamers.
It's like LC, linear combination thing.
That's not even that, it's literally just redrawing it. Mm-hmm. It was playing with models on paper, you could say, to make hydrogen in the right position to visualize. But now, how would I write this molecule, S-butane-2-ol? Turns out there's multiple answers. Because if I have my alcohol pointed up from this position, is it going to be a wedge or a dash? Why? Because priority one, priority two, priority three. It looks R, but remember that the hydrogen's actually pointed towards you. So you have to reverse whatever you see. So yes, as the way it's written currently, it's S. But what if I have written it pointed down instead? Trick question, because you just rotate 180 degrees around on paper, you get the same molecule. So still has to be pointed away so that 1, 2, 3, it looks R, but it's really S. But what if I had my zigzags the other direction, like this? Now it would be a wedge. So there could be 1, 2, 3, and be S. Or I could have also written it like this. All four of those are correct answers. So what I'm trying to say is do some practice going from structures, or going from the name to a structure. Yeah. They're all the same molecule. Right, they're all the same. Now let's get to some of these stereochemical relationships. And let's start with the easy one, enantiomers. That's right, these are the classic non-superimposable mirror images. Since they're mirror images, that means all stereocenters are inverted. So if I take some random molecule, put in some functional groups, and then say let's assign R and S to them. So let's see. On the left we have 1, 2, 3, that's S. On the right we have 1, 2, 3, that's R. Double check that I did that right.
Is that BR?
BR, yes. See, oxygen 1, carbon with bromine and carbon 2, carbon with just carbon 3, hydrogen in the back 1, 2, 3, counterclockwise, that is S. Bromine, carbon with oxygen and carbon 2. Carbon with just carbon, 3. It looks S, but the hydrogen's pointed at me, so I have to reverse it, so it is R. If I make the mirror image, I've got two choices. I could do it like I did in class the first time around, where I just draw everything backwards. But a simpler way to do it would just be to flip the wedges and the dashes. That's exactly what you can't do when you're drawing ring flip structures on cyclohexanes, because it makes the mirror image. But here I want to make the mirror image, so I really did just flip the wedges and the dashes. And so this will find out that the alcohol now has an R configuration, and the bromide position now has an S configuration. Yes?
I don't understand what you mean when you say all stereo symbols
are inverted. Exactly what I just did here. So where everything was S before, it's now R, and where it was R, it's now S.
So I was confused too early.
Oh, okay. Yes?
I cannot see why is it R?
Then ask me in office hours, because I got to move on to what these different types of stereoisomers are. But you'll just have to believe me for right now that it's S and R in the first one and R and S in the second one. Point is that these are enantiomers. They're mirror images. And I'll make this comment that I made verbally. All physical properties are identical except optical rotation. And really, that's the end of the story for now. They're mirror images, period. Yes?
So if we use
well, polarizer, they have the same polarity. Oh, polarizer. The light would travel differently, but the polarizer filters light, not molecules. But there are techniques we can use to separate enantiomers, but that's for another lecture. Now let's see the next type of stereoisomer. It's called a diastereomer, which is a non-superimposable, non-mirror image. So we would say that some stereocenters, but not all, are inverted. And let me give you a different kind of example. So here I have three fluorines. If I change two of them, but if I don't change all of them, then they're stereoisomers. They are different 3D configurations, but they don't have a special relationship with each other because they're not mirror images. An important point is, since you're not mirroring the molecule, it's going to have different physical properties. So diastereomers have different physical properties, much more easily separated. Yes? Did they have what? I'm sorry? They have the same formula, and all the bonds are in the same atoms, so the same connectivity. If you look at it, the only difference is where it's pointing in 3D. Is it a dash or a wedge? So because they have exactly the same formula, they're stereoisomers. And I guess to answer partly what you're really asking, a diastereomer is only a diastereomer if it is a stereoisomer. So it's not just any two molecules that are hooked up differently. They have to be stereoisomers, but if they're not mirror images, then they're diastereomers. Now there's a subset of diastereomers called an epimer, which that term may not be in your chapter, but you will see it and we will use it. It is a subset of diastereomer. In which only one configuration is different. So these, only one, thank you. So this pair of molecules are diastereomers. They're not mirror images, but they are stereoisomers. It's a special kind of diastereomer, though, where only one position has changed between the two molecules. So this is an example of an epimer. Why do we get this term? Where does it come up? When we talk about carbohydrate chemistry. Because we're going to learn about a special subset of epimer called an enomer that you only see in sugars. If you know or if you've seen anything about carbohydrate chemistry in the past, you might have heard of alpha and beta forms of sugars. That alpha and beta form, that is the difference between two epimers. But I'm not even going to try to write those structures down because that's so far in the future. We don't need to worry about it yet. But these will be our three kinds of relationships. Enantiomers, diastereomers, and then a subset, epimer. But there is one more relationship, which is not a relationship between molecules, but a special case. That addresses this question. Is it chiral? And what do I mean by that? Well, chiral means that you have molecules that are non-superimposable mirror images. So what about a case like this? Is this molecule chiral? Why?
Because it has a symmetry with the molecule.
Does it? You are fast with geometry then, because you're right. Because if we make a rotamer out of this, if we twist the single bond, then we're going to end up with the two OH groups pointed the same way. But notice that means that we now have an internal mirror plane. The left OH group, is it R or S? The left OH group, is it R or S? That automatically means the one on the right is going to be S, because the two halves of the molecule are just mirror images. Now, if the two halves are identical, think about this. One of those stereocenters is going to cause one form of optical activity. It's going to cause light to rotate one direction. The other half of the molecule is going to cause the light to just rotate back exactly the same amount the other way, because it's a mirror image of the molecule in its own self. What would happen if you made the mirror image of this molecule? It's the same. A meso compound, which is what this is called, is a compound that has stereocenters, but because it has a plane of symmetry, is not chiral. Instead of saying not chiral, we usually say achiral. This occurs because there is an internal mirror plane of symmetry. Which causes the optical rotation of one half the molecule to cancel the effect of the other half. So in other words, no optical rotation. So meso is not a form, it's not a relationship between stereoisomers. In fact, if I gave you this molecule, then the fact it's meso would mean that if I asked you to write and it's enantiomer, you'd have to say there is no enantiomer for this molecule. Because the mirror image is itself. However, there are diastereomers of this molecule. And in fact, one classic presentation is to do the following. To draw the four possibilities. Between any two molecules that are right next to each other, these are diastereomers. Why? Because only one of the two stereocenters is being changed. If you have anything different than all of them, that means they're not mirror images. That means they're diastereomers. For the molecule on the lower left and upper right, they are enantiomers. If you determine their R and S, you'd figure out they're reversed from each other. But then these other two, the upper left and lower right, are the same because they're meso. The last topic that I'll leave you with, we'll have to discuss at length later on, which we will. It's a perfect place for it. But here's a reaction that the morning section saw, and afternoon section you're about to get smacked with. Turns out that if you take this alkyl halide and react it with water and heat, we're going to get two products. If they get too loud, you are free to walk out and tell them to quiet down, by the way, anyone in the back. So this alkyl halide reacts with water, forms two products. If you form the two products in exactly equal proportions, then each molecule individually is chiral, but the solution won't be. Because one molecule will turn light one direction, the other molecule will turn light the other direction. It's not like what the meso case was. Meso is when the molecule itself cancels its own internally its own optical rotation. But if these two molecules are present in equal amounts, or if enantiomers are present in equal amounts, then the solution is called racemic, which comes from a root word meaning bunch of grapes, because some of the early discoveries that were made in stereochemistry came from tartaric acid, which is a compound that comes from grapes. We're totally out of time, so I'll wrap up this aspect of what a racemic mixture is the next time we have a chance to talk about stereochemistry.